writing this off as a legal matter, improvising from the committee's work. So I do apologise to the FDA. I am going to open the meeting at first in upcoming on that basis, can we have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda on that basis, and we'll try and get through this as swiftly as possible. Thank you, Honourable Wabalsa. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Are we all right there? Because I saw your hand, Honourable James. Right. As this is going to be a briefing, essentially then first by Wabalsa, who may be requiring the screens, I say that, followed by FNB, who may wish to add anything, Standard Bank, Absa, Nedbank, Capitec, Africa Bank. Is there anyone who isn't here this morning?
Sorry, African Bank is on its way, but they should be here.
Thank you. Honourable James.
thank you and good morning. The meeting was supposed to start at 9. We've heard the apologies, and just in a humorous note, I would like to make the remark that if this is a bank that is supposed to start at 9 and open at 9:20, you would have blocked many customers. Thank you very much.
That is worth noting. It's a pity on these unsecured lending people, some of whom are illegal. There doesn't seem to be any time that they walk in or walk out. They run a 24-hour operation by the sound of it. Not that that is a justification, Honourable Chamberlain. Yes. Thank you. On that note, without further delay, that not that you have occasion, but can I just indicate that the committee has very little time today, and this is a very important matter. So I don't think I need to say more than that when I call on the various people to make their presentation in this regard. So particularly on that note, then, I'm looking at the people here. In the first instance, we've got Bartha, Kavadia, NMB, Mr. Nevert, Standard Bank, Mr. Ndwandwi, Capitec, Van Skulvig, AXA, Evans, Nedbank, Crane. I mentioned the African Bank last because I understand they're still on their way. Mr. Dikutu, the National Credit Regulator, Ms. Mojgare, the CEO, and the Company Secretary, Mr. Machaba. The DTI, Mr. Nyesi Tenzi, is he here yet? Is Mr. Kotwane here? Thank you. And Mr. Clarence Makaba, is it? Yes. Thank you. And then, on that note, I'll try to chair from down here. So, please, let's be economic with time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we will be economic with time. Can I just also say that we have one more person from Standard Bank, Andrew van der Goorten, who's also sitting over there, so just an addition to the banking delegation. Madam Chair, thank you very much, as usual, for the invitation and allowing us the opportunity to appear before your committee. What I'm going to do is run through a BASA presentation, individual banks. If the presentations have been put together in consultation and with the banks that are here, and if any bank wants to add anything to the presentation, they could do so, but they will certainly participate in the questions and discussion time and respond to questions and discussion as and when necessary. We've been asked to brief the committee on the unsecured lending environment, and we will do that. We'll just go through some statistics, which I think the committee is broadly familiar with, because not too much has changed since we last spoke to you. We want to brief you more fully on the agreement that we signed with the National Treasury last year and where we are on that. We'd like to make a few comments on the Fairness Information Amnesty, and then just some concluding remarks, so it's a fairly quick presentation. If you look at the credit environment, there is undoubtedly an ongoing shift to unsecured lending, and these are figures from the NCR as of September 2012. However, the year-on-year growth is slowing, and certainly from what the banks tell us, and if you look at the results recently published by some of the banks, between September and now, credit has actually contracted even further. So while there has been a shift to unsecured credit, the growth is slowing rapidly, and certainly between the end of September and now, we will see further slow contraction of growth. And that's primarily because of demand issues and also because banks are obviously being very careful about how they do the lending. We want to be responsible in the way we do the lending without cutting credit altogether. There's higher origination levels that still result in the growth of the lending book. So this is industry advances year to year, and again, September 2012. And again, year on year growth is about 10%. If you look at quarter 3, 2011, and if you look at that, the unsecured credit was 102 billion. Quarter 3, 2012, 141 billion. It's gone up. But again, it's going up at a slower rate than it has in the last couple of years and will actually slow down further in the next few months or since September. There's a continuous shift to higher income on low and unsecured credit. So if you look at mortgages, over 15,000 Rand is the gray area, and you can see the substantial portion of the people earning over 15,000 in mortgage finance. Very few people in the low income, it's 10 to 15,000. Secure credit, also by income group, you can see that, and the unsecured credit, you can see that if you compare from quarter 1, 2008 to quarter 3, 2012, you can see the gray area actually increasing. So people earning more than 15,000 Rand are getting significantly more and more into unsecured credit and are demanding unsecured credit and are being less lent. People earning less than 3,500 Rand, if you look at quarter 3, 2012, have gone up significantly. So there is definitely a shift to higher income along, including in the unsecured environment, and there are reasons for that. We can go into that in discussion. The household debt-to-income ratio, if you compare between 2008 and now, it's gone down from 82.7% to 76.3% in 2012. Obviously, compared favorably to what's happening in some other parts of the world, but that is something that we all obviously need to be careful about because of the particular socio-economic conditions that we face in South Africa. But it has gone down, and what's interesting is that for total credit, now this is not just unsecured credit, but for the total credit market, if you look at the debt service ratio, it's sitting, in September, was sitting at about 11%, around there. So if you take the total credit market, all loans, not just unsecured loans, but 11% of people's income is going into debt service. Obviously, it goes up in the unsecured environment, but that's a picture at the moment, or again in September 12. And if I could just say, the fourth, these are SARB figures, sorry, it's not NCR figures. Then just to look at what the major factor is in differing margins and risk appetite. So this is basically to show that the lower the risk, the lower the margin. The higher the risk, the higher the margin because banks price for that risk. So if you look at mortgages, bad debt, and this is a typical range of product margin and bad debt. It's not so if things are bad debt might go up. If things are good, bad debt might go down. But it is a typical sort of scenario. Bad debt in mortgages is about 2%, it's under 2%, and therefore the margin is also quite low. Bad debt in unsecured lending is about 10%, and so the margin is quite high. It's a 3%, certain margin in the banking area. It's a bit higher in the non-bank area. But this is just to demonstrate that the margins are linked to the risk that each category of credit presents, and banks essentially cycle that risk. And that's just to make that comparison. Then just quickly on the National Treasury BAFA agreement, we agreed that there's no financial stability risk as a result of the unsecured credit environment. Now that's because the unsecured credit is still a very low percentage of our total credit. It's in our view being reasonably well managed in the banking sector, and this is with the banking sector because the regulator saw the regulator banking sector. But we, when we met with the Minister of Finance in October last year and we agreed to go into this deal, we said that even though there isn't a bubble, and we are convinced there isn't a bubble, that we needed to look at conduct in the industry, and we need to ensure that we are doing this responsibly, we are doing the lending responsibly. And so we decided to look at a number of things. One is to formulate standards to measure affordability, and to look at some sort of proxy to measure affordability, whether it's a debt servicing to income ratio or whether it's something else. We want to be beginning to do some work on it, to give us a firmer guidance on what unaffordability means. We know that the National Credit Regulator is doing some work on this as well, and at some point in time, we hope that we'd be able to, I know that Credit Regulator, in fact, sent me an email yesterday to say that at the appropriate time they will engage with us on this. And we hope that we come to a meeting of minds on some sort of affordability standard. Individual banks are to offer relief to qualifying stressed customers by reducing installment burden at no additional cost. I know individual banks are doing that, and during question and answer, if members want to raise that with individual banks, they can do so. This is their business, they're doing that in different ways, and they can respond to that. We also agreed to roll payment data onto bureaus overnight and have that more up to date, and we're talking to the Credit Providers Association and the Credit Bureaus Association on putting that into place. Minimum norm that stands for credit life insurance, we put the committee together. Again, we know that the National Treasury, the Financial Services Board and others are doing some work on this, and we ask them to actually put that work into our process so that we can begin to work on this together. We don't want to run ahead, do too much work, and then come to a stage and find that there's a mismatch between what government is doing and regulatory agencies are doing and us. So we're talking to National Treasury about that. Emolument attachment orders, we want to see how to relook at that, how to control this better so that there's no abuse of garnishee order, there's no abuse of emolument attachment orders. What sort of processes do we need to put into place that need to be met before these are used, and how we can put that into regulation. Again, the National Credit Regulator is doing some work on this, and the regulator did say yesterday that she will engage with us at the appropriate time. And then to support initiatives against credit providers using pre-signed garnishee orders. So even currently, where garnishee orders are being abused, we need to identify that and clamp down on it, and we're more than willing to work to do that. Then on the debit order side, we're talking to PAVA and we're talking to the National Payment System to ensure that when debit orders are instituted, they're known to standards, the debit orders just aren't instituted against customers' accounts willy-nilly. We're also looking at the ADO and ADO payment streams. Again, here, PAVA, the Payments Association of South Africa, and the National Payment System Division at the Reserve Bank is doing some work on this, and we are awaiting feedback from them, and we link to that work. Consumer education, we've got a team together. So the work underway at the moment, as of 30th of January 2013, we met the entire credit industry, which includes the non-bank lenders, the retailers, and so on, and they've all committed to work together in this agreement, and they will participate, and they have second the people to some of the working groups that we're working on. National Treasury will end that meeting, and National Treasury effectively asked the non-bank credit providers to participate in that, and they have agreed to participate. Five working groups are being put together to look at various areas of this work. Industry representatives are nominated, and work has started. We also engaged Credit Provider Association, the Credit Bureau Association, in loading of data. And I've mentioned FALA and MPSD, FFB on the National Consumer Education Initiative, NCR doing the work on credit life standards for affordability and consumer education. Some issues here we have addressed upon the NCR and we're fetching the regulator contacting yesterday to say that we would appreciate the NCR participating in this initiative, and the NCR made me yesterday to say what they do in where they are in their processes and at what stage they'd be able to engage us, and we are very happy that is happening. In the meantime, I think we need to work together to ensure an even more effective application of the NCA while we're in this process, because I think there are problems in the NCA and the regulation that could actually take care of some of the problems that we have. The issue of unregistered vendors, and I'm not talking of non-bank vendors here, I'm talking about unregistered vendors. They are non-banks, but they don't belong to any of the non-bank associations, and I think we need to find some way of clamping down on those. I know it's difficult, I know these are people lending from behind from the wood of their cars, and so on, very informal, very bad practices, but in some way or other we need to begin to get a handle on these. So that's where we are on the unsecured credit. Chairperson, if I could just quickly on credit information amnesty, because to a certain extent it is linked. The Zaire Committee on Trade and International Relations in the NCOP, as you know, has instructed DGI to work on the possibility of an amnesty report back. The DGI view, and this has been public, and we met their consultant, is to expunge poor credit records of low earning under 15,000 rand. Sorry, earning under 10,000 rand should be, and with debt less than 15,000 rand. DGI is also of the view that expunging this will, and enabling people to get access to more loans, will increase economic growth and job creation. Key elements of the amnesty seem to be data removal, strengthening of affordability assessments, which is also into the DGI, limiting the cost of credit life insurance, credit literacy training. Now, you know, strengthening of affordability assessments, no problem. We do that all the time. We don't believe that removal of data actually facilitates that. Limiting of cost of credit life insurance, we're keeping down credit life to ensure that any inefficiencies there are dealt with. We don't believe we need an amnesty for that. Credit literacy training, again, we need to continue doing that sort of training all the time. We don't believe we need an amnesty for that. Our view, we principally in disagreement with this. Because we believe it's incorrect and it creates risk and encourages an inappropriate government practice. We hear about the DTI saying that the intention is not that people will pay the debt, but that we believe that expunging of negative credit information and enabling people who have not been able to manage their debt to get more debt is just counterintuitive. If there are problems with all the risks, and one of the things that the DTI has said is that they have word that some employers use the credit, negative credit listing in their employment decisions. If that is happening, if people are breaking the law, not using the information, let's deal with it. But we don't believe expunging the information is a way to deal with it. Expunging of data makes lending more risky. And essentially what banks will do is they either cut back on lending or price for that risk, not making loans more expensive. They will be irresponsible if they did not price for that risk. And they would be irresponsible if they lend without proper data, because then they could be doing reckless lending. So we believe that the impact of this and the consequence of this will be less loans or more expensive loans rather than more. Indications are that loans are being taken for unproductive purpose in some instances, so doubtful that amnesty will have positive impact on economic growth and job creation. All indications are that, and this committee has raised this issue in the past, that people are actually borrowing for consumer. Now, if people who have negative information and more loans, it's going to be consumerism. It's not going to lead to any real economic growth, productive growth or job creation in our view. We're working hard to ensure that lending is responsible and inefficiencies are addressed, hence the agreement with National Treasury. And we believe we need to continue doing this. With National Treasury, with the Treasury, with DTI, and with us. And I think that more interaction between the industry and given that the non-bank credit providers have also agreed to participate in this initiative, I think more interaction and engagement between the credit providers across the board, the regulators and government, and sitting down together and strategically talking about what the industry looks like, what the credit environment looks like, agreeing on what we need to do, and then agreeing on how we do that is far more productive than things like an MS. Key elements included under the joint statement, availability of accurate data, and so we agree that we need to ensure that data at the certain bureau is correct, on time, even any inefficiency there that's used. Sampling and reviewing of affordability assessments, we agree that we need to ensure that we are responsible in the way we do our lending. We need to ensure that we are not lending recklessly. And that's already agreed. Credit life insurance, work has begun on it. We already in the process of doing that. If there's any inefficiency, there's any misuse, that take care of it and that deal with it. Consumer education, we've got a team working on it. Credit regulator is working on it. Again, we can put our forces together and ensure that we have appropriate education to the right people, understand what the impact is and so on. So we believe that all of that can be met without any amnesty. We disagree with the amnesty. There was an amnesty in 2006, 2007. It failed. More people got into debt. Their debt shot up immediately thereafter, and we've got figures to show them. We don't see why another amnesty should work. And we also don't see why we should be sending out a sort of message that folks get into trouble and every 5 years we'll declare an amnesty. Not the right message to send. UNIVA, Bureau for Market Research, Consumer Vulnerability Index failed. It went up from 47.9 to 50, quarter 4, 2012. So consumers are vulnerable. We don't want to create a situation where people who have not been able to manage it become even more vulnerable by taking on more debt. Our recommendation is that this committee be part of this program. We believe that this committee is the appropriate committee in Parliament to look at issues related like this. We were suggesting that the committee ask for public submissions, but we are mindful of the committee's agenda, the committee's schedule, and we will write formally to the committee about this. We believe that at the very least the committee should be putting together some sort of a technical group to engage with the relevant stakeholders and to look at the pros and cons of this, because we really don't want to do something that the consequences of which we need to pick up later on, and we could actually spend more time in critiquing this more carefully and making the right decision along the way. And we're more than willing to participate in interacting with such committee that we consider all aspects of this, including extension of additional loans to people who have not been able to manage loans as a negative risk. So conclusion, Madam Chair. Unsecured rail share increase, but no systemic risk, being closely monitored by industry and FARB, and the figures show that the increase is beginning to taper off. It's not increasing at the level it did. It's becoming tighter. Also, I think we need to appreciate that, and you need to look at this within the context of the broader banking sector. We are, by and large, we are a good banking sector. We rate a second in the world for stability of the banking sector. And it's an effort that we need to actually together protect. That doesn't mean we don't deal with issues, bad practice, and in the industry. But let's not isolate what is essentially 10% of the total lending and say that that makes the banking sector better. Let's deal with the problem. We also say that credit per se is not bad. I mean, and again, if credit is used for proper purposes, productive purposes, if credit is extended responsibly, it actually does lead to economic generation. But it has to be extended to people who can manage the credit, who can afford to service the credit, and not to people who have already shown that they cannot manage the credit, and we then give them more. The joint national treasury agreement and with the industry and with the NCL participating, as and when they want to do the internal process, so we believe will contribute to a more effective private industry. Significant progress has been made in the last few years. We looked at consensual debt resolution, implementation of a debt review process, and industry voluntary process that doesn't exist anymore. But we believe that there's still room for us to perhaps reopen those discussions and see if we can, in some form or other, put a voluntary debt review process into place, because we believe it will help. We will obviously continue to have substantial meetings with the NCR and DDI, particularly SIGLA. And we believe that we will continue to have those meetings. Amnesty, we believe, is a bad idea. And Chair, I think we also need to begin to appreciate that the unsecured credit issue is essentially a symptom of a broader problem. The broader problem is that people are borrowing money to put food on them. There's a broader socio-economic issue. And we need to put our head together to see how we deal with it. I mean, the MDC has now been accepted as the plan for the country. It talks about the socio-economic challenges. Let's put our heads together, certainly at BASA, we drilling down into the MDC to see how can we make the MDC a living, implementable document. What projects can we identify? Who do we work with to actually begin to address some of the underlying causes, the symptom of which is our secure credit? So I think we need to put our heads together on that. I've just mentioned that. So that's an effort to apply to also generate savings. That's it, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I don't know if banks want to add at this point, but over to you.
Yeah, no, Mr. Vardy, you've got a point there. I know that our evidence is the bank reform here, but I want to make sure about that. I said, I think I know that the African Bank was not yet with us. I'm not sure if they have since joined us. The Africa Bank.
Yeah, I see
you there. Oh, yes, sorry. Unfortunately, you're sitting right behind, I think, Mr. Potwana, so there is a seat up front. Thank you. On the basis, I mean, would any of the banks who come in here in the independent capacities as well, is there anything they would like to add to this? Please give your name and your bank. Thank you.
Christophe Nivert, Citizen B. Well, we strongly support what Mr. Kabadi has said, and we are committed to agreement with National Treasury in terms of addressing over-indebtedness. The main point we want to make, the bulk of lending in this country is via mortgages and vehicle finance. It makes about 1.1 trillion of the 1.4 trillion of consumer debt. That is extended at low margins, and in our view, banks have to be conservative in extending such credit. However, this is put at risk by unsecured lending, which has significantly bigger margins and significantly bigger risk appetite. And this really puts the bank at risk in terms of the loans. It also puts the customers at risk of actually losing their homes or their vehicles in terms of being overdue. In respect of the solution, we are strongly in support of affordability guidelines. So we believe customers should not be overdue at the point of credit origination. If we can solve that problem, that's really the fundamental problem that we are faced with. Two other main issues we are concerned about that are dealt with exactly in the agreement is really the preference for unsecured lending in terms of the payment system, where smaller loans actually get preference in advance of larger payments such as mortgage loans. So that is the work stream on the early debit order system that was referred to by Mr. Kabadi as well. And then we believe also that the use of garnish orders or emollient attachment orders greatly facilitates the overgearing of customers because it allows an aggressive lender to get access to the payroll system and therefore get preferential repayment, and it facilitates the overgearing of customers. Therefore, we are also strongly in support of the agreement with National Treasury to fundamentally address this problem. It's not just the pre-signed garnish order, it's actually the fundamental use of the product where a customer has been overgeared in an aggressive way by a party. That's all from us.
Thank you very much. Is there another bank?
Just from a Nedbank point of view, Gavin Payne. I think totally agree with what's been said and fully support the agreement between the National Treasury and BASA. I think one of the key things my colleague alluded to was the overdrawing of clients at origination, and I think as the banks are sitting in this room, I think we all agree to that. The problem is that the second or third and the fourth lender that comes in that's outside of this ambit that creates the threat as well. So from our point of view, it's important that the whole credit industry is part of this agreement. Thank you.
Thank you. Advocate Bank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that first I support the presentation that was done by CAS on behalf of SAFA. But second, Madam Chair, I have a concern, and the concern is that in the last maybe 12 months or so, unsecured lending has been, it seems, the perception that it seems that it is tainted as the devil of lending. And Madam Chair, I have to comment on this because Paxson Bank was one of the pioneering banks on unsecured lending. And the reason we did that is because other banks could not lend to ordinary South Africans because they did not have collateral, they did not have security. And we took the view that we will raise money from the capital market in order to meet the needs, the developmental needs of people in South Africa who didn't have security. And I, on behalf of Africans, am very proud to say that we have opened access to credit to millions of South Africans who did not have access to credit because they were not given that access by the mainstream banks. Having said that, we also are aware of the fact that micro lending, as it was called at the time, had a very bad reputation in terms of the practices that the micro lenders and or loan sharks, i.e. those people or those lenders who are not registered and brought upon in terms of keeping cards and pins and pin numbers of customers. I think it is important to say that one of the reasons we are in fact discussing this today is because there's been increased competition in unsecured lending. And the increased competition is because every other player in lending has come to the space, including the big banks, major banks, who were not necessarily playing majorly in this space before. They have come into the space because it was the only growing space in lending. And this is the space where we've been historically. That's the only place African banks only play in unsecured lending. We do nothing else. On the 16th of August last year, we were the first bank to point out that there are risks in the unsecured lending space. We, as a result of the position we took, we lost a big chunk of market share in terms of the share price. But we felt that we were right. It was the right thing to do, to say that, guys, there is a problem looming if we don't do something about it. Madam, I'm very pleased to say that today, I think, there's been pullback in unsecured lending, and therefore the growth has slowed down overall, including African Bank, which has also de-risked business deliberately because we saw that there are some segments of the market itself that are beginning to show unacceptable reflex. But Madam Chair, I want to say this, that we know from our data, by independent research, carried on by independent research company, that there are millions of South Africans who use unsecured credit to improve their quality of life. They use it for incremental housing. They use unsecured lending for education. In fact, Madam Chair, I'd like to invite you and some members of the committee or all members of the committee to work to some of our roadshows where customers tell us we had a tear-jerking moment where a minor told us that he's got a child who is now a doctor because he took loans from a friend bank to educate him, and today he's a doctor. He also told us, another child said, he referred to him as an HR person. I don't know what that means, but I can only assume that it means that it's someone who's qualified in HR. Because he took the loan. So, I think that there is a danger of bedeviling unsecured lending, when in fact unsecured lending has become a source of improving quality of life for people who don't have securities. Remember, the South African banking industry was historically designed to serve a certain population of South Africa, where people had access to the security, etc., etc. And we are pleased to see that the slowdown in the growth of a secured lending was like, we were concerned about it as African banks. I'm speaking now particularly as the people who got the biggest exposure in the unsecured credit market in South Africa. And we are concerned about it, we are de-risking the business, and we are very happy that the Banking Association of South Africa is acknowledging the fact that there has been concern, and we have engaged with National Treasury on the issue, and we continue to do so. We appreciate the concern by the Portfolio Committee on the trade industry in this matter. Thank you.
Very much, Mr. Scooter. Yes, and that is?
Caroline Ndwandwe from Standard Bank. We supported the Standard Bank in the past of President Delifuri, and we just believe that the key is really not unsecured lending specifically. The issue is responsible lending, it's fairness, appropriate pricing, and making sure that we do not create a situation where customers are over-indebted. And I think that's really what we're trying to address here. So rather than looking at unsecured lending versus secured lending and all those kind of discussions in my mind, the other thing that I think we would like to support most is a call to re-look into the credit bureau amnesty. Because one of the things in South Africa we pride ourselves of is good quality bureau data that we've got, and that in the rest of Africa right now is lacking. And what we've seen in the rest of Africa where there is no good quality bureau data is that pricing tends to be applied at max to make up the potential risk that could be observed. And that's not good for customers and not good for any bank in any form and in any way. And we really think that should really be assessed and addressed appropriately. Thank you.
Very much.
Yes. Tom Evans from EFSA. With my colleagues, I support the proposal spoke to by Mr. Kapadia and support the joint statement and the work group OCUS. Similar to comments made by African Bank, has also recently pulled back in personal and lending. However, we have remained selective in growth over the last few years. We continue to work towards ensuring responsible lending and always the customer's interests come first. I'm sure my colleagues will agree with me and I try to talk to these points based on the comments that Mr. Kavadia made in terms of how strong banking industries in South Africa operate rigorous risk governance structures to ensure that the risk appetite of the bank agrees to is always adhered to. All regulatory rules are adhered to, zero tolerance to not achieving that, and the customers are always protected. We continuously review stress testing of portfolios, we continue to test better risk controls, so we continue to improve ability to mitigate risk and to protect customers. For defaulting customers where it does happen, we focus on rehabilitation, debt review, and obviously voluntary process to remediate customers. Thank you.
So you say you support BASA, but also these are principles?
I support BASA. These are principles that we also adhere to within our risk management structures.
Thank you. And just ask Mr. Scooter just to put the mic on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We're saying the switch of the mic. Sorry. Yeah, it's just that we can't hear others. Right. Now, we've heard from the banks then, BASA, which I believe you all belong to, and then your own different interpretation of it as well. Right. We had only one slight, somewhat different response, and that came from Africa Bank per se, but everyone has had an opportunity to express themselves now. Well, I know they didn't take advantage. Was it just... You see, yes, I just wondered if, you know, you had nodded off, and anyway.
Madam Chair, I don't take any offense because I didn't avail myself of the opportunity. As far as capital is concerned, we, with certain nuances and differences, we do agree with the BASA statement and the presentation that you've just seen. I would just maybe reiterate that the committee should take careful cognizance of the environment in which we operate in South Africa today. They should take extremely careful cognizance of the history of credit provision in this country. And you've heard some of the sentiments of my colleague from African Bank. We have a dispensation pre-1994, which denied people access to credit, which denied them the opportunity to build a balance sheet. Then along came a new dispensation. Along came what, with minor qualifications, we regard as a very good statute, the National Credit Act. It opened up access, as you've heard, and now that we have people using credit to improve their lives, as you've heard, now we shy away. I think that is not the correct way to look at it. I think the way to look at it is to ensure that the environment is properly regulated, to ensure that your regulator is properly staffed, resourced. I cannot talk on behalf of the National Credit Regulator, but I wonder whether they employ people with qualifications that you would see insufficient numbers to regulate a country where this is a growing industry. So I think the emphasis and the energy of this committee should go in that direction, to empower the people that must ensure that there is fair play out there. And that really, in my mind, is what I just want to emphasize. I also think that one other aspect that you should not lose sight of is the impact of the 2008 financial crisis. And I can put it mildly by referring to the demise of secured credit. Because the world, as far as credit extension is concerned, has been changed completely. And we should take cognizance of that as well. So credit extension in this country is different to what it was before. And we shouldn't hop back to the past. We should manage the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, then, Mr. Lumsford. I will say just at that point then, and I'm glad now every bank has had the opportunity to make their point, that given the time constraints that we do have, which I contributed to as well, it may be advisable for us to immediately come with, you know, the National Credit Regulator before we as a committee engage. And I'm looking around at the committee as I say that, because we were due for a tea break, that's why I'm looking for at least some agreement in that regard. Instead of breaking, right, are we all in agreement to proceed? Right. Well, no, I wasn't too sure there was going to be tea, I believe not. Oh, good, okay. Okay, fine. So we can immediately then, and my request will be to those just on my list, Barsa probably, thank you, Mr. Kavadi, just to make a little bit of space there for the National Credit Regulator, who may meet, if we all move up one there, are we able to do that? Then you won't have to go to the back benches. Are you there? Right. Okay. So we have here the CEO of the National Credit Regulator, Mr. Carl Garvey, and Mr. Mark Sharper, the company secretary. You have may not have heard everything, but you heard most of it, and you yourself have had, engagements with BOSA outside of this meeting, at least I'm hoping so as well, so that you're not disadvantaged in any way. But we're going to hand over immediately to yourself, given that the issue in question is unsecured lending. We've already heard that the Select Committee, of which we are aware, has dealt extensively with this and to the point where an amnesty is on the table with certain conditions attached. Right, so over to yourself.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, good morning. And some good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I will not take up too much time. I just tell the Chairperson that perhaps what we need to do is to give you an update of where we are now in terms of unsecured lending since the last presentation that we made. These are the topics that I'm going to cover, so I'm not going to go through the list. And let's just take our minds back to why it is that we felt we needed to be concerned about unsecured credit. And this is information, the first that we picked up at the NCR early last year, where we decided to commission a study after we had had one-on-one meetings with the bank to try and understand why it is that there was a shift, from mortgage lending to unsecured credit. It was very ready for the NCR to have an in-depth understanding of the growth, in unsecured personal loans and to inform policy in that regard. Let us also just remember that, you've got on the one hand, the South African Reserve Bank, which is concerned with safety and soundness and prudential regulation and all the good things. And on the other hand, you have the National Credit Regulator, which is really about consumer protection. And we are saying that even though unsecured credit, as we said today, constitutes 10% of the total loan book, which is sitting at 1.3 trillion, the 10% for us really is about the impact that this has on the consumers that have been extended these loans. Just to give you an overview, on the credit supply, we need the availability assessment guidelines, disclosure of total cost of credit, monitoring and enforcing compliance, market practices review and credit provider internal control. And on the demand side, we have the demand by consumers of the unsecured credit, monitoring levels of overdue, consumer education initiatives, protection of unviable practices, access to credit and credit usage. Now, as Mr. Kaskovagi indicated, yes, indeed, in terms of the stats that we have analyzed with NCR from the credit providers, we have seen that there has been a contraction in lending. Unsecured credit year on year, and although it has grown, however, year on year, it has only grown by 8%. The last time when we reported to you, the figure was sitting at 49%. So it has been a contraction. It's still growing, but however, at a slowing rate. And on the other side, we have, in terms of mortgage book, which grew by 41.3 billion. That was an increase of 5.3% at end of the second quarter. And at end of third quarter, that grew by 4.3%. So the fact that it's little, credit that goes towards mortgage loans, and that we can prove that, some of the unsecured credit goes towards improving, of houses. That still remains a concern for us and in the country. Let's go back to the slide. The majority of the people who have, you know, taken on unaccredited credit between are those people who are earning between 3.5 and 30,000 a month. The most significant category is between 7 and 15,000 a month. However, there is a growing, you know, demand from those people who are earning more than 50,000 a month. And these are people who continue to take on unsecured credit. Yes, indeed. Even in terms of the stats that we've analyzed from TransUnion, the TransUnion as a consumer credit index, the rise in the index reflects some stabilization in consumer loan impairment, which means that there is an improvement somewhat in the performance of those loans. And that is also, I will show that to you, that is also illustrated by the facts that we have received from credit providers to say that consumer impairment is coming down. But I think it's too early because you're talking about the trend of a period of 1 quarter. Sorry. And yeah, increasing payment record over the period to quarter 1, 2010, and we started seeing a deterioration, you know, of consumer spending, those consumers that are considered to be in good spending, meaning that the impairment started going up after that. We are now sitting at 9.2 million consumers with impaired records out of a total population of 19.7 credit active consumers in South Africa. It's still a concerning trend. I just thought we could just share some stats with you on debt counting. The overall amount distributed to date in terms of the debt counting process is about 9 billion, and this is money that is distributed by credit by the payment distribution agency via credit providers. The number of applications on average per month is about 6,500. And at December 2012, the number of consumers loaded on the PDH, meaning those consumers who, you know, intend to pay, for less than 23,000. But only 77% of those consumers, you know, end up, you know, paying their restructured repayments to credit providers. And in terms of the level of competition, we, through the study that we conducted, if you recall, and this still continues because of the deep six studies that we conduct, the consumers don't really shop around. And to find most consumers are installment driven rather than, you know, looking at the total cost of credit. We need to find ways of communicating that information to consumers so that they can start shopping around and comparing deals. And, you know, one of the things that we intend to introduce the pre-agreement code, and that will be effected in the amendment to the regulations, would be to introduce something like repayment factor. So that the consumer should understand what it means to take on a loan and repay it over a much longer, you know, repayment period instead of a shorter repayment period. That they should understand that if you take over a shorter payment period, it's cheaper than if you were to pay this loan over a longer period of time. So that repayment multiple, you know, will be introduced. Credit Life, I think, let us provide the cover that we, for the tax team that comprises the NCR, National Treasury, the Reserve Bank, Competition Commission, that is looking into the abuse of credit life in this industry. And in terms of credit agreement, as I indicated, there's some disclosure recommendations for development, and as I alluded to, we have finalized a draft on the affordability the affordability assessment guidelines, and we will be, you know, putting that out, you know, for comment. But it is part of the credit amnesty proposal that has been presented to the DTI, the related DTI initiative. In conclusion, we need to differentiate between financial system and consumer protection, and we have indicated and illustrated that consumers remain vulnerable to economic conditions. And that the level of consumers with impaired credit records, although growing at a declining rate, it's still a concern for us, and we need to find ways to address that. And to also just keep checking whether unsecured personal loans or unsecured credit current growth, whether, you know, it's sustainable in the long run. Credit life disclosure is also very important, and we need to address the abuses of credit life insurance. And further consumer research in terms of consumer behavior, you know, is the study that we have, you know, started working on. And those are our recommendations, Chair, to conduct a further study into that. We have started the process. And one of which is also to look at credit usage to really understand where this money is going to. And monitor level of unsecured credit against the level of over-indebtedness of consumers. And of course, consumer education is very important. We'd really like to encourage healthy consumer credit behavior. And so that consumers understand what the implications of credit are. And of course, supervisory investigation is also very important, looking at, you know, governance focus. And on-site review, we've already started doing on-site visits to some of the credit providers to try and assist them to comply with the Act. And yeah, we spoke about the principle-based affordability guidelines, which, you know, the draft, we have finalized the draft. It will still need to be presented to the DTI. Before we can engage, you know, everyone else in that process. And I thank you.
Thank you very much from your side. Just ask the MDR if you just put, yes, thank you so much. Right. We are obviously not asking for DTI's comment at this particular point in time, because we do have a national credit regulator here, which is, some people would say independent, others would say autonomous, and needs to be identified as such. Right. We are going to break, but if there's somebody who wants to comment before we go, then we'll come back and engage you all. If you still haven't finished, is that the idea? Thank you,
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't think that we will ever finish this discussion. Madam Chair, the reason I want to comment is because, first of all, to say that we appreciate the work of the CRF, and that over the years, in fact, before the implementation of the NCA, we collaborated with the CRI, we gave input, and some of which, or most of which, I think, found its way to the National Privacy Act, which we are very grateful for, because we think that the National Privacy Act has done great things in terms of our financial regulatory status in this country. The particular comment that I would like to make with regard to the NCR is that we are very concerned about the fact that it seems as if there's no obligation on the part of customers that is affected. Customers have an obligation. They have duties. And in fact, it is the NCA, by the way. When a customer is alone, he or she has obligations and duties. And we're concerned about the fact that it seems that the trend that customers don't have obligations and duties, that lenders or credit providers are the only people who must have duties and obligations. And that's not right, Madam Chair. It cannot be right. Customers, when they enter into a loan agreement, they have to acknowledge their own obligations in I think a national credit regulator or CDI or an anybody else must acknowledge the fact that customers have got obligations. They can't plead ignorance. Madam Chair, let me say this, that we've conducted consumer education projects, and we know for the fact that when customer comes to the bench, they're not interested in consumer education. They're not interested in financial literacy education. They want a loan. And they want it as quickly as possible. And I think that it's possible, it's necessary, in fact, essential for the regulator to understand it and to take into account when they look at what is happening. And then later on, customers complain. They say we were extended the loan recklessly or this and this. But every time when they branch, they want a loan, they want it as quickly as possible. So, Madam Chair, I think it's important to actually bring this in because it's part of actually consumer education. Thank you.
I just want to indicate before we leave that there was a statement made by BAFTA that that it recognised the fact that there had been this amnesty that was there, but it seemed then in the actual final analysis per se, there was it did not consider this in principle a good idea and of course gave their reasons. And most of the banks indicated they did in fact support this, and then we are assuming at this particular point in time that in principle African banks too support FLAD, recognises that there has been this decision in the select committee, but in principle doesn't regard it as a good idea. Is that the issue? I just want to be clear that all the banks are on the same wave per se. Right. Did you actually comment on the actual amnesty agreement issue there?
Yes. I think I have indicated that basic information amnesty is very DTI correct. However, the NCR are tasked with the responsibility of providing, inputs and doing, an impact assessment on the site. But I can safely mention the fact that there is a draft proposal. An impact assessment study was conducted. Consultations took place. We are now at the stage where we are studying and reviewing findings together with the DDI. And to make recommendations to that effect. I've got a gentleman here, class who can perhaps provide further details to that effect. Or also, can I ask the cabinet secretary because he was also quite close to the process. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Honourable Committee Member Mashaba. Good morning, Chair and Honourable Committee Member. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we will appreciate that we have a problem in the country of a growing levels of consumer over indebtedness. And I think what informed the select committee was whether it's appropriate to have an intervention, because at that point, no measure was coming from anywhere. So they said we need to look into this, and as the NCR, we believe that it is an appropriate intervention. However, what we said, it must be different from the first amnesty in that we need to come up with other interventions that will address the underlying problems that are contributing to or are the cause of the consumer over indebtedness. It is not entirely correct that people became over indebted solely because they were given amnesty with the first amnesty. There was a global financial crisis which led to massive job loss in South Africa. We acknowledge that there is also some measure of regular lending borrowing in the market that leads to consumers to be over-indebted. So what we really say is that with this amnesty, there will be probably limited data removal, plus other measures that will address the problems that led to over-indebtedness, and also looking at preventing any unhealthy financial credit acceptance or growth after the amnesty. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mishaha.
Just on the point of order, we are now discussing an amnesty issue which comes out of the Select Committee, which is the Council of Provinces. We are a National Assembly portfolio committee. Now we suddenly have an agenda item on the amnesty element, which we've never discussed in this committee that I'm aware of. Look, I don't want to debate the right or wrong of the Amnesty Committee, and that's another issue. But what I'm sort of puzzled as to how you, as the chairperson of our National Assembly Committee, has put onto your agenda an issue which was raised in another house by a third committee, maybe the committee member, but it could be perhaps, you know, maybe our committee staff can't comment yet. But I'm a little puzzled by it, because certainly I don't think the amnesty should come out of this committee.
I didn't put it on the agenda. It was raised in the inputs. I'm sure you were listening to the inputs. And if you felt at any point in time that the person making an input was out of order, you could have raised your hand. But this is the first time you've now raised the issue. And that is indeed what has been brought up as part of the issue of unsecured lending. We didn't bring it up per se. It came out of the input. Now we are going to... No, I'm not taking more inputs, so I think I must make that clear. We are going to come back after tea and engage. Thank you. It looks like it's 26 minutes past 10. Can we take a 10-minute tea break, please?
Very difficult for them to manage. But my last point is that indeed the players that are not registered in the arena have to be monitored and to be discouraged. Because, I will not show you that, because, you know, if we don't develop strategies of discouraging that, we will find that what you are trying to address at best, which we must encourage you to further address, to reduce the indebtedness of people, it will not be done by yourself, but it will be done by the loan sharks. So it's important that as a team, we devise strategies of discouraging or reducing the playing field of the loan sharks. But the main thing is that as a team, we should be able to win. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentations as well. The problem that we're facing must be read against the larger background of the world economy and South Africa's economy and the cycles in those economies and also the lending cycles. Now, I've noticed that the banks who disagree, or most banks agree with the proposed amnesty, and I understand your position on that. But I must also say, without finding that the amnesty is necessarily the correct tool to correct the problem that we're facing, that the banks have had lending cycles before 2008 that were just incredible. Anybody could get credit very easily. If you look at the type of people who received home loans, it was just so easy. And then when 2008 hit, suddenly nobody could get home loans, including people who are quite financially strong. And it's clear that the banks ride cycles. Obviously, you need to make money or business, I understand that. But the fact that the cycle is being ridden, and you weren't as naughty as the guys in New York, that's for sure. I mean, if you looked at Toxic Instrument, they invested in what they created. But still, if you just look at the home industry in South Africa, at one point it was just getting so heated and was growing tremendously, and people were becoming millionaires out of trading in property, and now nobody can sell their homes. And the banks have a big role to play in that. It's a large part your fault, because it's just so easy to get credit, and suddenly you can't get credit. There's no systemic stability. And in fact, the cycles are too easily used to make money, and that needs to be looked at. And the same goes for this new cycle that we're in now, where you don't look at home loans, but you look at unsecured credit. It creates huge problems for South Africa, and we must look at the unsecured credit problem also from the background of South Africa's challenges, the administered prices that's going up on, you know, electricity, for instance. Yeah. Energy prices on petrol, petroleum are going up. You have, because of the strikes, you're going to see increases in food prices. So the consumer and the middle class and the poor people are becoming under strain more and more and more. And we're probably going to see increases in tax this year as well. We'll hear this afternoon what's going to happen. So increasingly there's pressure on the people of South Africa to make the country work while they don't have enough savings. So what I'm just trying to say is that we need to find a responsible way of dealing with lending in South Africa. So not to put you as businesses in trouble when people can't pay their loans anymore, but also to protect the consumer as well and to protect the integrity of South African economy as a whole in the end of the day. I'm not sure whether an amnesty is the answer, but I think we need to look at this holistically. But what is very important, and that's what the gentleman from African Bank said, is that responsible lending is very important for South Africans, because how else would you go and study? How else would you try to build a business? We need to try and find a way to still support people, but in a very responsible way, so that they are not over-indebted at the end of the day, and that you are protected as an industry as well, and that South Africa itself is protected. Thank you.
Very much. Honorable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. The President will appreciate both reports which were presented to us this morning. But what I have, Chairperson, is what is not in the report. Chairperson, if you can look the newspapers through, I think from January, from last year actually, you could see that there was a strong adversarial relationship between the National Credit Regulator and the bank. You can see the venom through the press. Look at the Sunday Times this weekend at the business station. Look at how the National Credit Regulator has been attacked. And then, but here, it seems everything is okay. That as well, I'm having a problem. Because it means that certain things have been covered up as we're moving. And then, if we start doing that, Chairperson, we're going to be pushed over the cliff. Why do I say that, Chairperson? It's very simple. I think that one person was commenting there was even suggesting that the national credit from the side, on the side of the bank, suggesting that the national credit regulator must be de-established. Instead, deal with financial services, must be the only body. From the chair, I think that our economy and our country don't need that type of the relationship. So what I ask between the two bodies, which are here in front of us today, is that are they having properly structured relationship so that if there are any issues, they really discuss them fairly? Because I think that person has gone to the aspect that if the National Consumer Tribunal implements the recommendation of the regulator, they are going to fight it all. Yeah, everyone has the right to fight for his or her space in the legal environment we are in. But do we really need that adversarial between the key stakeholders in our economy? Are we not having proper forums where these issues can be discussed? Because really, if we stop discussing these issues, although only they might be, we are going to end up over the cliff. That's the first aspect which I'm going to deal with, or which I'm going to comment about. The second aspect, Chairperson, is the issue is from the African Bank and Capital in particular. Comrade Chairperson, the responsibility goes to it. I agree 100%. Every South African citizen has got a responsibility for all his or her actions, to the bottom line. Yeah. But what we must do, appreciate, is the unequal society we are living in. Comrade Chairperson, we go to our own constituencies where we are working. The issue of literacy is a challenge itself. Literacy is a challenge. Yeah. So what does that mean? It means that the people who are involved in the economy, they must be extra cautious in dealing with people. That one is the bottom line. That one, there's no one must take that responsibility. The lenders themselves must take that responsibility. But at the same time, also the bodies that the National Credit Regulator, they must also do proper advocacy campaign. So that this message is spread. Everyone is a potential problem. It's everyone's responsibility. So that's why I like what the National Credit Regulator was saying, that the issue of public education is critical. But it must not be only here in Parliament. For example, in the district where I come from in the Free State, I've hardly seen such advocacy campaigns. I've hardly heard about them. So what is critical here? You must take responsibility around. So it means that the regulator plus the leaders must do that job thoroughly. And then Chairperson, the last one is the issue of the interest. Typically the banking sector. We've got constituents who go to the banks to go. And then when they are in trouble, you know what is the first protocol? It's the MP's office. That's why they come. They'll tell you, I have an SMS they're selling, looking at the income of a person and the expenditure. Besides my cell phone, I have to intervene the MP. Must come with a silver plate. You find that not only Mashonisa this time. These are the banks which belong to us. Get a statement, it's very clear. I don't want to name banks here, because we're not here in the name machine. But what is critical to see that what was happening in a statement? One, a person goes to pay the loan. Immediately he or she pays the loan, the statement comes out to indicate how much he can take. Really, I think that's what corrected. Because this person has not yet addressed the issue of the loan is borrowed. but it's already been enhanced to take further. So you can see that the person will go to that bank and live on those short-term measures. So I pay my 2,900. Suddenly the printout comes out back, no, you can take 3,000 or you can take 4,000 with it. So those are the things you must be controlled. I think that the regulator must come into the play of that program. Because you can afford what happened in Wall Street. The main street ended up bailing up the Wall Street. But really, is aside from capital in particular. That is lesson we have learned from the Wall Street. It cannot be, we don't want that lesson, we don't want it to be repeated here. So, as said that, because the change of the Scott London, if really at the council we cannot agree to that, we cannot agree to that. I think that the issue of proper regulation of the foundation is very critical. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Fadeli, Honourable Vandermeer.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I would like to ask whether we are in fact getting all the information that we need. I still don't have a clear picture about who is lending. We know what money bracket they're in, but who are they? I don't have a sense of who they are. Are they civil servants? Are they my workers? Are they, who are they? And the second thing I want to say was, what are they spending their money on? These ones that are borrowing money. Now we've heard stories and there's a sense that people are spending their money on improving their lives, either improving their houses or not. Let's face it, we've got two enormous banks here who are obviously doing well while providing unsecured lending, and there's billions and billions of rand circulating in the economy from precisely that loan book. So I think we need to understand a bit more clearly who are these people. You know, I'd like to have a face to them, in a sense. I don't know if all those questions are answered in the study that has been done by the NCR, but I think from my point of view, it's not entirely clear. I must say, I would much rather we have banks that are registered with the Reserve Bank and that are obviously making money, lending people money, than have the informal sector doing it. And so in that regard, I think it's a very important contribution to our economy, the unsecured lending from the two big banks that are doing it solely, or more or less solely. I think I'd like to agree with Honourable Albert, and I very seldom agree with him, but on the case about the question of home loans, that to me is a really serious problem that the big banks have come across. You read about in the newspaper every day, all the big banks are either reducing their exposure to home loans or they are writing off millions, and something's wrong. They're doing something wrong. And I think we need to take, it's very hard to get a home loan, as the Honourable Albert said. In fact, you have to be quite rich to get a home loan, and then you get charged prime plus two or three. And I mean, that's expensive money. That is very expensive money over 20 years. It's no wonder people go and walk out of Africa Bank or Capitec with the money in their hand and build on a room for the grandmother. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So I really would like to have more understanding of who are the people that are borrowing money and what are they spending it on. The second thing I think we need more information on is the amnesty issue. Both hand in hand with that, who are we talking about? Instinctively, I kind of agree with Barker that amnesty, you know, is a dodgy thing to do. But I also don't agree with whoever it was that said that we have good quality data. Because I don't think we do have good quality data. I think the whole data system needs to be cleaned up. The skillers who are borrowing money, not paying it back, and are very high risk, need to stay there. But there are others that I think there is a case for. So I don't think it's as simple as either we do the amnesty or we don't. I think there needs to be a clean-up of what is going on in that database that contains all these people. I've got lots to say, but I will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, look, I'm afraid I wasn't very impressed with the NCR's presentation. You know, in preparation for today's meeting, because we haven't dealt with the topic for some time, I went back and read your presentation from the last time you were here, in the third quarter of last year, I forget exactly what date it was. The presentation you've given us today is almost identical to the one you gave us then. There's no new information, there's no new analysis, there's no progress. This committee has been talking about this for a year now, always with the understanding that this is an urgent issue that needs your urgent attention. But it doesn't seem like there's been a great deal of progress in the last 5 months or so. You talk here about a task team looking into the abuse of credit life. We heard that at the last meeting. How far is this task team? When is it going to reach some kind of conclusion? At the last meeting, I asked you about a review of the formula for the maximum interest rates. You promised to get back to me in writing about that. I have never received anything from you in writing. I'd like to ask you once again whether you've made any progress in the review of the formula of maximum interest rates and an explanation, whether you could provide an explanation of that formula, because it doesn't quite make sense to me. Then you spoke about one of the things that you have made progress on is that you've done an impact assessment for the DTI on the proposed amnesty. Could we see those impact assessments? I can't think of any reason why they need to be secret. Let's have a look at them. Let's read them. Let's debate them. What is Barth's view of them? I'd certainly like to receive those, please. And then I'd like to echo the point made by Honourable Fanavadro about insufficient information. You know, time and time again, the presentations focus on the regulated lending industry. And we've got a great deal of decent information about that. We know whether it's going up or down, etc. But we have no idea about the scale of the problem in the unregulated, illegal loan shark industry. And it's not difficult to get information on that. You know, one need only go to your average South African township when it's pension payout day to see the extent to which illegal lenders swarm like vultures around those such payout points. Have you done any work on what the size of the problem is in the illegal industry in South Africa, and why have we not seen that data? Because I think that's critical. You know, we're sitting with 300 billion rand industry here. But what is the size of the illegal industry? Is it bigger than that? How big is that problem? We really are shooting in the dark when it comes to that. Then on BASA, the thing that wasn't mentioned in your presentation was the issue of marketing, how you actually go and find new customers. I think that is a critical issue, because some of the marketing by, and in all fairness, actually mainly by non-bank lenders, you know, furniture stores and that kind of thing, but in some respects, banks as well. Some of the marketing is incredibly aggressive, and quite unfairly so. And so I think we need to have a discussion about bringing marketing into the agreement. Then I wanted to ask you, Mr. Gavadi, about the NDA review. We've been speaking for a long time in the committee about the need for a review of the National Credit Act. But once again, it's one of these things we've been saying to the NCR, we've been saying to the DTI, we haven't seen a great deal of progress. In our last meeting, they said it would come sometime within the next 12 to 15 months or something like that. What work have you been doing as BASA on NCA review? And have you been working with the NCR? Are you guys tugging on working on a review together and agreeing some kind of minimum point of agreement before, you know, the DTI takes 18 months to get the job done? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hilders, Honourable Hilders. I only had James and Honourable James and Honourable Bagasa, and I didn't have your hand here, but I'm checking in case we overlooked Honourable McIntosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My instinctive feelings are very similar to the Honourable Fanamarva. Amnesty, and I'm talking about finance, not anything else. An amnesty in this area is, my bones tell me amnesty is not good for business, and we should be very, very careful of that. But I've got two questions. One probably links to my colleague Hugh Lewis's question about unregistered lenders. I mean, I personally am a huge fan of Africa Bank and Capitec. I employ quite a few people as a farmer. I think they've done a fantastic opening up to unbanked people the opportunity to gain finance. Certainly this helps me. I don't have to make so many loans anymore to my workers. I can tell them that the banks you can go to, but they don't like the interest rates. But what I want to know, under unregistered lenders, people like Letasi Finance, Lohen, and there are a whole lot of these guys that you see around the town, and maybe I'm completely ignorant, are they registered in the same way as Capitec and African Bank and other people, or are they registered in some other way? I mean, I can't believe they're unregistered. And then I would like to also ask you guys, Madam Chair, through you too, Bata, would you support, and one would have to do it to a kind of focus group or get somebody around to find out what is the scale of unregistered lenders? What we call, or what we know now from, is Marshall Nisa, which if you don't know, Sulu, is actually not a nice name. Marshall Nisa means the oppressors, literally, although it now becomes just a vernacular word for somebody who lends money in the grey market, I think. The bankers, and I see Mr. von der Wolfen has a grey suit on, but the grey market is the informal market. So I want to join that. But the second question, which I've got, is you say on some issues, it is imperative that NCR is a critical party to the initiative and part of the working group. Could you unpack that for us, please? In terms of how would you see the NCR being part of it, what would you hope they can contribute, and how can you help them, and what would be the dynamic with NCR? So those are my two questions, unregistered lenders and NCR.
Honourable James?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make the point that the fundamental problem in our country is this division between those who are part of the formal sector and those who are not. And on formal side, I mean, the World Economic Forum ranks our banking industry in the top five in the world, top two, in fact. And so you have a very well-run banking industry. But the question is, how can we take that asset and use it to pull in the informal sector into the formal sector? And therefore, I just want to say, first of all, I think amnesty, as an aside, is a bad idea. And secondly, there has to be a commitment on the part of the formal banking industry to solving the problem of indebtedness by looking at what's happening in the informal side of the lending business. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable James. Honourable Sabanza?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. The first question that I would like to raise is about the repayment system. I would like to find out whether the debit order system of repayment is the most effective and less costly system, or is there a better system that would also ensure that both the lender and the consumer are able to manage the debt. That's number one. I raise this issue because I want to link it to the question of stop order, to stop order versus debit order, or any other system that might be found to be much more comfortable and effective. The second issue, Chair, is I think Standard Bank mentioned, among other things, good pricing. I would like to understand what is meant by good pricing. Now, the cost of lending, the cost of credit, is expensive. But what do you consider a good pricing of credit? And I think that would lend itself quite favorably to the education that was needed here, educating the consumers about that as well, because
it is true that not all of us are aware at the point of taking the loan of the cost of that loan. The third issue, Chairperson, and probably the last, I think that the issue of amnesty, which was raised here, is an important issue. And it is true that it was raised by the Select Committee, but there is nothing wrong, Chairperson, in this committee looking at that issue as well, if it is raised with this committee. Besides the fact that the Select Committee is a committee of Parliament, it's just that they are sitting in another house. So I think that it is a matter that we can pursue together with the Select Committee in an attempt to assist the industry as well as the NCR to manage what we think is becoming a problem in the country, and that is the problem of overlending and blacklisting and so on and so on.
Yes, thank you very much. There are just two or three questions I'd like to raise myself. The last one, the third question perhaps can be linked to the last point. Certainly one has become aware that employment is very often related to blacklisting in the sense that it's very difficult for some South Africans to get jobs if they are blacklisted, etc. So that also plays its own role. The other thing as well is the point that was made by someone on either African Bank or Capitec that indeed improvements to the house comprise a fair percentage. Of course, we weren't given the kind of percentage it did comprise of your lending book or the educational one and so on. And somebody on the committee did request it would be useful and constructive if we got some kind of breakdown of what is just the money, I don't know, to entertain or to pay off yet another bad debt, and what loans are made that would be constructive infrastructure and education, etc. It would really be helpful for the committee there. The other issue as well that I think on a previous engagement we have, I know here it refers to the average interest rate of 23.5. We've heard percentages closer to 50% being raised. Now, I'm not sure where that came in, 50%, and I'm just asking our committee secretary to check on that as well. But we didn't hear the low figure wasn't always the one before us, and this is hardly low. The other point made here is that I see the National Credit Regulator has pointed out the cost of, in terms of the credit line is not disclosed as part of cost of credit in an integrated manner. So, you know, if one is not giving it in an integrated manner, it may make it very difficult to be a responsible borrower if certain information is not forthcoming in an integrated manner. The other point I would just like to make, because I think most of them have already been raised, you see, when one looks at issues, and I know the issue has come up even now from members of the committee around amnesty, and members are very aware that there's a need for responsible banking and responsible borrowing. I don't think anyone disagrees with that at all. But I think any perception that becomes entrenched, and I wouldn't like to see becoming entrenched, that amnesty, which would be generally granted in this particular case, possibly to people who have not had the opportunity to benefit from borrowing and so on before 1994 and in a responsible manner, then, you know, the guillotine hits them and they may be seen perhaps sometimes too frequently as irresponsible. And yet when we have big people, you know, and other people, I call them the big boys, those loads of money defaulting and so on, whether it's along a tax line, whether another line, you don't really hear the sort of issue coming up. And I become concerned that I would not like to see us applying one set of principles here and another set of principles with another sector. I would like to see the same set of principles apply across the board, but in a responsible manner. So having said that, you've heard the comments, you've heard the questions. Some were specifically directed at the National Trade Regulator, and others more broadly. So this time, I mean, by raising your hands, Barty is there, most of you in terms of the banking, and if they leave something else, you can raise your hand. Yes, Mr. Clavardius.
And Chair, I'll try to deal with some of the issues, but I want individual banks to deal with some, and if I could just warn them now what I'm here to refer them to. On banks pushing credits before 2008 and home loans being given and now cut back and so on that one, Christoph, if you could deal with that. On credit factors, more loans being given while people are repaying and so on, between Sami and Christian, if you guys could deal with that. On data, Gavin, if you could take that up just on who we lending money to, civil service, mine workers and so on. On marketing, Sabani, if you could just deal with that, whether we aggressively market or not, and so on. On repayment system, whether debit or a de facto or is there any other system, and pricing, Donald, you could deal with that. And then on interest rates, 50% and up, the sort of indicative rate that we're putting at 30% for unsecured lending. Christopher, if you could deal with your graph so, and others can add. And then on cost of credit in an integrated way, again between Christian and Tommy, if you can deal with that. So I'll come to you there. Just let me take up some of the broader issues, Chair. The thing about as many South Africans as possible getting involved in the financial system, being financially literate and so on, we would fully agree. And as a developing country, we're doing pretty well. The FinScore 2012 study by FinMark Trust showed that 67% of people are in financial services in one form or another, up from 63% a year before that. So we're moving in the right direction. We're probably one of the best developing countries as far as financial inclusion goes. And we are doing very well. We fully agree that we shouldn't overburden borrowers in the process. And that's one of our problems with the amnesty issue. One way not to overburden borrowers is to have as much information on borrowers as possible so that you don't overburden them. So absolutely, I think we're doing well in bringing people into the system. We agree we shouldn't overburden. We agree on education, and individual banks can talk about that. Banks spend a fortune on education, and not only to the literate. I take into account the fact that with our history, education literacy is a problem, but banks have different types of education programs that speak to different markets, and they take those things into account for a very simple reason. It's in their interest to have educated borrowers. It manages the risk for them. And they can talk about it. A number of people have mentioned non-registered lenders. Absolutely, we want to work with the NCR and whoever to bring those people into the net. And I mean, there are a number of organizations that represent borrowers, that represent lenders, both BASA for banks and non-bank lenders. And all of the organizations, including the Microfinance Association and others, and we meet them often, all of those organizations would want to sit down and see how we can actually deal with the unregistered lenders. And so we certainly want to do that. The thing about banks pushing credit, Christoph will deal with just now, but I think we also, and somebody made the point, I think Namisanda Melva made the point, that I think we also need to be clear that if banks do not do this lending, and together with, I think, non-bank credit providers who are registered and who are doing this responsibly, then we force people into the underground lending. The demand for the money is still going to be there, we like it or not. And so we're going to get the money from somewhere. The relationship between NCR and banks, I mean, sure, stuff in the papers and so on. Let me be frank about it. the relationship we would want to see is the sort of relationship we see with our bank regulator, which is we want a robust regulator who interacts with us often on strategic issues related to the industry, in this case the credit sector of the industry. We talk about the sector, we look at what strategically we need to achieve, what's good for borrowers, what's good for lenders, how do we maintain a good banking system, how do we manage unregistered lenders and so on. And that sort of interaction informs the regulator. And once the regulation is there, and the Fed regulator in this case doesn't need to review us all the time, we might say something and say this is the sort of regulation we need. Fed regulator might say, I consider all of that, this is how I'm going to regulate. Fine. But we go through a process of ongoing engagement to actually minimize the possibility of unintended consequences as a result of regulation. That takes us a long time to then deal with, and that way we get into acrimonious sort of situations. So we would want to see that sort of relationship. I mean, we had the credit regulator a couple of weeks ago. We agreed that we will meet more frequently, and we will look at a program to do that. And so there have been problems. I mean, let's not run away from it. But we certainly would value a structured, frequent, strategic interaction where we differ at times, where I think most of the time we would agree on the broad objective, and that then informs the regulatory environment. In that way, we party to this, whatever the regulation is, even if we don't agree with it, we know that we've been through a process of interaction, and then it brings about more certainty and it brings about a regulatory environment that says that we essentially in this together. And so I believe we can do that. I mean, we've, as I said, we met and we will continue to meet. I think the honorable member said that, and I was quoted in the Sunday Times, said that there should be no national credit regulator. I did not say that, and the Sunday Times did not say that. What I did say is that under the Twin Peaks regime, our preference as BASA would be that the national credit regulator falls into the market conduct Twin Peak under SSB. That doesn't mean SSB take over, but falls into that Twin Peak, and our position would be that the national credit regulator should politically be accountable to national credit. That all regulations related to the financial sector, market conduct and others, should go to national treasury. No disrespect to DTI or anybody. We just believe that it brings about a coordinated environment for regulation of the financial sector. And that's what we said. So we didn't say do away with the credit regulator. We just said, and that's our view. Then the credit practices they'll deal with, data they'll deal with, marketing they'll deal with, unregistered have dealt with. I'm sure the regulator will pick up where people like Lohan and what is the recent one? Sorry? Let's start seeing and so on, whether they registered with a regulator. I mentioned that we would want to work together to bring those people into the net. The point I made that the NCR is a critical party to the, at this point in time, BASA, National Treasury, Non-Bank Lenders Initiative. This is all an initiative about the unsecured lending environment. The credit regulator is responsible for regulating that. And as I said earlier, that the credit regulator did send me an email yesterday telling me where they are in different aspects that the agreement is dealing with and when they can engage. All we're saying is that, and again, if work is being done on credit lines by National Treasury and others, we've got an agreement under the agreement that we need to look at how we're dealing with credit life. We'd rather that at the earlier stages that work is combined so that we can coordinate. So we don't move ahead and National Treasury and DTI, whoever is working on credit life, move ahead, and then in 2 months' time we find we're totally apart and then we have to start all over again. It's just not productive. Okay, so that's what we'd like to see. Using the sort of banking as an effort to pull in the informal sector, and again, individual banks can talk about this. The major banks, the four that are sitting here, and I'm not looking at African Bank and Epitech here, they have a particular market. The other four all have community banking divisions today.
they're all looking aggressively at the unbanked market, which is the informal market. And they have different programs. One of the banks has the Zeebo's Aki Township, and they open an account for savings account or a loan account for people on their cell phone in ignorance. Other banks are doing other things. So there's a lot happening, and they could briefly talk about it if they want. But that is where the market is. And it makes sense for banks to actually target that market and bring them into the banking sector. So there's a lot happening. Repayment system and so on, Donald will talk about. Madam Chair, the issue about employment and blacklisting, I did say in my input that, and again also to members on the matter, if there are problems in the credit bureau system and there's a wrong information and so on, let's work together to clean it up. And amnesty does not do that. I can assure you in 4 years' time you'll have wrong information there. Yeah. Let's clean it up. It's not in our interest to have wrong information. But let's target that problem and clean it up. If people are using that information to not give people employment, now, in a certain industry, I can tell you, a bank is not going to give employment to somebody who's been financially negligent in the way they deal with their money, because then they'd be negligent when they deal with customers. So in certain industries, certain things would be looked at. But if that is being misused, then let's deal with that problem. And I think that we need to focus on the problem and deal with the problem. Let me stop there, Madam Chair, and if we could just start with Christoph, if you don't mind, on the back pushing credit for 2008, and then just take it from there.
Madam Chair, okay, this is, I guess, the billion rand question: what happened after the global financial crisis, and why did the banks extend so much on mortgages? Really, if one had to go back to probably what happened in 1980-2001, was the last crisis that happened prior to the global financial crisis. After that, since 2002, South Africa had the biggest post-war boom cycle ever. And that really resulted in customers gearing up significantly, and you would have seen the chart that Mr. Kabadi showed where gearing levels of customers over a period of 4 years went up from below 50% of income to peaking at 82% of income. The customers were gearing up significantly. However, banks were lending very aggressively, even on mortgages. The reason for that is during that cycle, banks were showing literally zero default on mortgages. So banks mistakenly believed that mortgages were very, very low risk, and banks opened up credit appetite. So there was aggressive lending. At the same time, mortgage originators brought into place a model where banks were auctioning effectively were bidding for a loan. That pushed typical margins down on mortgages from about 3% to 1%. Now that is the legacy. If you have a 1% margin, effectively you can't suffer more than 1 in 100 customers going back. So very low margins. But as we all know, in this customer gearing up, the customers were not gearing up just on secured credit, they were securing up on unsecured credit even at that point of view, whether it's on credit cards or even personal loans. When rates went up, when rates were hot in 2007 and spot in 2006, 2007, 2008, rates went up to 15% went up by 6%. That triggered a massive collapse in the repayments of customers who had by now not just only had mortgage debt, but had taken on lots of other debt. And as rates went up, it collapsed. So I think that was pretty obvious. Now the question is, why aren't home loans available in the same way? If you actually look at the numbers, the mortgage origination has recovered quite nicely since 2008. So it was above, sitting at the low point of 18 billion per quarter, and it's back to around 30 billion per quarter, but it's still a lot less than it was for all those same reasons. The margins are still low on mortgages, so banks have to be conservative. They cannot lend to customers who have a 1 in 10 chance of falling over, right? Because margins are just, still today, margins are sitting at, over the back, maybe at 1.5% on new origination on mortgage, typically a margin may be 2-3%. So, limit risk appetite, Basel III liquidity requirements, capital requirements, all these have weights as well on mortgages, making it more expensive for banks to fund such long-term liabilities. You're taking a 20-year view on a customer when you give a mortgage loan, And remember, you have no protection as to what happens to that customer after you've given a loan. That customer can go and can take out as many unsecured loans as they want to. In today's environment, it's not a big problem because rates are ultra low. We're sitting at 40 years low rate environment. So mortgages, as you'll see, the banks are showing profit in their mortgage books, or generally are showing profits in mortgage books. If rates go up by another 5%, it can happen. That will trigger a significant stress on those large mortgage books. That's why mortgage books are, why banks are conservative in lending on mortgages. The problem is you have no protection against the gearing of the customer. And then, as we pointed out before, and this is part of what we are trying to resolve with National Treasury, in the payment system, there's preference for smaller payments. So a customer can, a bank or a lender can decrease payment on an unsecured loan in preference before a larger secured loan, which is nonsensical in our view. Okay, except finally, I'll just touch then on the margins. On the margin slide, really, what we're showing there is not just interest margins, Madam Chair. We are showing total margin, and these are public financials. So if you take a lender, industry player, and you look at the interest margin plus the non-interest revenue, and the non-interest revenue will typically consist of the initiation fee, administration fee, and the credit life premium, typically, especially on unsecured product. That is where these margins, what we're saying is, let's say, a typical unsecured lending margin could be somewhere between 20 and 40%, whereas we showed a mortgage loan, typical margin would be 1.5 to 2.5, 3%. Did I answer the question for a second?
I think certainly it's important to know that, or to say, that the reason why we're still in business is because we lend money to the majority of people who come to borrow money for good reasons and who intend to pay it back. If that was not the case, we would not be in business today. Part of the concern that we have is actually that there's generally a concern about 20% of people who don't pay back their loan. And disregard of the 8% of people who pay back their loan. And the reason why we're still in business is because 8% of people, or 90% or 75%, pay back their loan. Now, in African Bank, we understand that there are customers who we call bad faith customers. And those are customers who take loans without intention to pay back. We also understand that they are bad luck customers, who are customers who fall into difficulties and then they are not able to pay their loan because they fall into difficulties, not because they intended not to pay their loan. So from a credit practice point of view, we obviously, first of all, have to comply with the National Treasury Act. But secondly, over and above the National Treasury Act, we have to ensure that we are fair as much as possible to customers. And on that note, we have won for 5 years, and this is not a small point, 5 years in a row, we have won once for our credit office for fairness, the time to have tell the customer in terms of their queries and how it deals with credit for 5 years, you know, and that's not, Madam Chair, like you know, this is not a small issue. And this one is of all the banks. So from a credit practice point of view, I need to mention that we obviously in an industry where historically it's been tainted. The microfinance industry or the micro lending industry has been tainted historically as an industry that has had bad practices. We have sought out to be in the industry and be a specialist in the industry and do nothing else than unsecured lending, which is what we've done over here for the past 3 years. But in addition, to ensure that we actually lead clean practices in lending. And so, from point of view of our systems, our policies, our rules, They're centrally controlled. They're centrally controlled to make sure that to a large extent, Madam Chair. Now, we run a bank, so we've got hundreds of branches, and we can't control each and every person in a branch. So there are people who are going to be caught in fraudulent practices. And in the last few years, data has shown that fraud has increased in banking in South Africa in general. But from an established practices point of view, we are confident as a bank that we lend responsibly. Madam Chair, one point I want to make on this is that unsecured lending with any bank, is generally more expensive than secured lending. There's a premium that is paid more for unsecured lending than for secured lending, for obvious reasons, which I will not go into at this point in time. And so when people talk about how expensive unsecured lending is, I think that it is important. And it's part of the consumer literacy and general public literacy about lending itself. But we pride ourselves for being a responsible lender and the biggest responsible unsecured lender in South Africa. Thank you.
I am going to ask people to respond to focus on the questions raised and also to be perhaps sometimes more specific, because the reality is 50% was high. In some cases, that's the reality. What we're looking at here is the reference to average, and I need to tell you how average is calculated. Right, next one.
Yeah, but...
Madam Chair, I'll speak to data, particularly around what banks are lending or who banks are lending to in this environment, and then probably what customers are borrowing for. I think in terms of who we're lending to, we really know who we're lending to because the bulk of our clients are really employed people across all industries and also into civil service as well. And I think a lot of this information is available and has been made available through the research papers that National Credit Regulator has commissioned, like feasibility, access to credit, and the University of Pretoria Law Clinic papers as well. So that information is available, and I think we also as banks pride ourselves on that, because when we see issues like in the mining industry, we actually know what segment of the population is impacted by these issues, and we're able to react accordingly. I think turning to what clients borrow for is a mixed bag, and we normally rely on the client's own advice at that stage in terms of their declaration. On most of these application forms, there would be a whole list of blocks that they could tick. And those would go from home improvements to education to medical expenses and possibly even debt consolidation as well. So I think we are acutely aware of debt consolidation as being a good portion and a bad portion in terms of people who consolidate a debt into more affordable loans. We think that's a good financial practice. And then you have people who consolidate their debt into extending their debt cycle, which we don't believe is a good practice as well. So I think we're able to verify all of these things, but when it comes to the data, we do verify employment, salary, etc. through payslips and bureau data. But I think at the end of the day, we left it to the customer's declaration on what he's going to utilize these funds for. However, I think we also do have kiosks in some areas where the home improvement centres, and we make those disbursements directly, so we know a customer, for example, would be buying a whole lot of building material that we would be funding to make alterations or improvements to the housing. Thank you.
Thank you. We ask for some questions outstanding.
Thank you. I'm retaining the marketing question. I just think it's important to acknowledge that in a competitive environment like ours, there will be a lot of marketing, and it's vital for us to all tell our clients what services we offer and if we're willing to serve them, especially when we're thinking about the lower income market, which has been previously underserviced. You have to tell them now that you can serve them, that you're willing to serve them. Otherwise, they will go to the old habits where they were going to the mushroom salad and the like. So we have to tell them those things.
However, it's important that also note that we do comply with standards like ASA's Advertising Standard Authority. We do comply with what is prescribed in the National Trade Act to say we must disclose things fairly and truthfully. We all have, I believe I can speak for all the banks in saying we all have our own internal policies as well to make sure that we've had the kind of marketing we do to make sure that it's reasonable and it's appropriate and we're not misleading customers. So there could be, though, of course, specific instances where marketing may be seen to be aggressive, and I think those instances should be dealt case by case because at an overall level, we try and comply with appropriate standards and make sure that our marketing is fair and not misleading to customers.
Thank you. I have two more questions. If I could just ask Donald to deal with the repayment system and so on, and then if I could ask Prashant to deal with the interest rate issue and integrated pricing, whether we do put all the pricing into an integrated cost.
Thank you. So I think repayment system is first on the bank's agenda, and in the joint statement which refers to both the ADOs and ADOs and the effectiveness of that, as well as the use of guarantee orders and emolument payment orders. Also two of the work groups that have been set up within BASA and other players within the industry are to focus on rather ADOs and ADOs get order stream and use of the guarantee orders and emolument payment orders. All the banks also work with BASA. BASA drives a lot of the focus on the rules in the space and the innovation and how it is utilized. I think it's important we don't force customers as what payments method that they need to use, but what if we make it easy for them and convenient for them to make their payments. Debit orders from a banking system are extremely effective in collecting funds. Your customers cancel, and they're not forced on customers if they wish to prefer in different ways. I think the challenge is the right one. This market is evolving. It's important that we strive for the most effective and cheapest form of payment for customers.
Very much. E-Tech?
Madam Chair, on the matter of the disclosure of cost of credit, I think it's a regulated matter. The Act prescribes how you should disclose it. We all try to comply. And if it is found wanting, then it's a matter that the regulator should take up and prescribe to us how we should do it. Lastly, then, on the disclosure of the cost of credit loss from the Capitec viewpoint, we cannot talk on behalf of the industry because Capitec does not charge clients for credit loss at all. Thank you.
The implication is that other banks do. Just addressing yourself, Mr. Kubalia.
Madam Chair, the implication is other banks do, and maybe if one of the banks they want to respond on how they deal with
it. Who are, who they can respond to, because it's one of their practices. Can they respond, please?
Madam Chair, a document bank we do charge for credit life. The National Credit Act requires that you should ask customers whether they have an insurance that covers or that could cover credit life. And if they do, then use that insurance. If they don't, you have the option to sell them your own insurance, which is what you do. So we do have an in-house insurance company, which is called Standard General, which sells insurance, which we do sell through all branches to customers. And at the end of the day, the loan is paid through an installment that includes the installment of the credit life. It does get explained to the customer. And the idea of the credit life is to ensure that should something happen to the customer, either retrenchment or death or disability during the time of his working life, that the credit life gets paid and that it does not become a burden to the family, in the estate of the family. Madam Chair, on this point, I should also just mention that we are happy to announced that African Bank has recently got short-term license from FSP 2 years ago. So we are getting into the short-term insurance business at big time. Thank you.
The question concerned was the cost is not disclosed as part of the cost of credit in an integrated manner. And that was the question per se, the integration. But we'll get some of these responses back in writing, please, because there are a couple that were not effectively responded to. And I think members are nodding here, and we'll need to get that sent to you, and if you will respond back on that. Having said that, and I hope, you know, I'm looking at the committee now, anything outstanding from here earlier, we will take down and they will respond. But Honourable Debbie, you had your hand up there.
No, Chair, I think the other input came from the National Credit Regulator. I think they ignored us. I was afraid that was going to be a meeting.
No, we're not. So we now are awaiting the National Credit Regulator, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. In terms of coming up with proper structured relationships between ourselves and BASA and its members, I just want to reiterate what Mr. Castro had earlier on about the fact that we are establishing regular engagement. And as you indicated, we had a meeting some days back, and we will continue to have those regular meetings. In addition to that, I will be meeting, or our executives will be meeting with the CEOs of the bank, and that we have indicated, to all the banks. Now, the issue of literacy, we do understand that it is a huge challenge. At the MCR, for instance, we really had challenges in terms of reaching out to rural areas. But what we've done in that regard is that we have joined in with the DTI. In terms of our contra lesser program to go to the rural areas because we did not understand the protocols that we needed to follow in those areas. But we have started those roadshows with the DTI and started last year, and they are ongoing. Who are the consumers? The study that we undertook did not look at credit use. However, we did, in terms of the information that we received from the last credit provider that participated in the study, including the bank, indicated, claimed, credit use. And what came out of that was that, some of, the credit was going towards home improvement, education, and a large portion which was a concern was around, consolidation. And we needed to really, interrogate that because consolidation can either be good or bad. The presentation, Chair, we did respond to the questions that were raised at the last meeting. We sent through our responses a week after we had that meeting, the last meeting that we had in Parliament. We will need to just find out exactly. I will check with Saudi. But we did respond to your questions.
It was emailed through to members. So let us leave that one alone because, in fact, members did get that. Thank you.
Okay. Unregulated lenders. In terms of the Act, not all credit providers are required to register with the National Credit Regulator, especially I'm here referring to the very small credit providers. But they are still required, of course, to comply with the Act. That's the reason why we, since last year we've been going out to, within various provinces, where we conducted raise as pension pay appointments. And we worked together with SASA and SAPS and managed to get a number of credit providers arrested because they were obtaining old pensioner pension cards, their ID books, and ATM cards and numbers. So those rates are continuing. We've been to a number of provinces. We've been to Marikana, Western Cape, and a lot of other provinces, KwaZulu-Natal and so forth. And we will continue to conduct those rates. Lohan and Desati, yes. Lohan is a failing name. However, we have registered quite a number of credit providers who are using that failing name and also registered Desati. NPR to be part of the Basa Working Group. We are, and as you also indicated to Mr. Kovadia, that we are willing to work with Basa, you know, in some of their initiatives, especially the education, you know, initiative, because we feel that, you know, we need to partner with our stakeholders to make a bigger impact. And I'm going to ask my colleagues to respond to some of the questions that I may have missed. All right. Thank you, Chair.
So we, have you finished then on looking at the National Credit Regulator at the moment? All right. Ms. Machigare, you completed?
Certainly, I've completed. Thank you. Thank you.
If there's anything outstanding, we will come back to you. We've got the DTI who wish a comment. I've seen your hand, Honourable Hill-Luth. Tuana.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and ladies and gentlemen. There are a few issues that the TI has been implicated on, that it might actually help the general public and the reporters here to bring some form of clarity on the issue. The writers speak about or talked about a funding of records. I'm not sure if they refer to that in the same context as the amnesty that is proposed is being structured. The expansion of records, if we're to be called, refer to that. The question is put, who are the beneficiaries of the so-called amnesty? What I think that it's important that the general public goes out knowing is that when you talk about credit amnesty, the targeted market was of the people who have actually settled their debts. They've paid their debts in full. But because the National Credit Act policy and the legislation actually keeps the names of those people for a certain prescribed period of time, say it's a judgment for a period of 5 years. Those people are not able to be resuscitated back into the credit market. And that is the approach that the TI is adopting, that when you pay your debt in full, and what's the best, then you should be, your claims should be cleared so that you can go back into the market. And our earlier study actually showed very huge numbers of those people. Hence, the view sometimes that by allowing these people back into the credit market, you can actually achieve higher levels of access to credit, which is one of the imperatives of the National Credit Act, that people should actually have access to credit. And the second point is that comparison to the previous amnesty cannot... the previous amnesty cannot compare to this one and the approach that has been debated on this one. And I think also the NPR has indicated that that particular amnesty or the failure or the rise in levels of debt indebtedness after that amnesty should not be compared to this one and cannot be attributable to that particular amnesty, because for the very fact that that amnesty was a failure, how then do you attribute the rise in indebtedness to a project that in itself was a failure? The other issue that we'd like to comment on is the relationship, which I think both Mr. Kavadia and the CEO of the NCR have already addressed this committee about. The DTI is taking about 18 months. Barbara would know that for the legislative amendment, that this project would probably have been complete by now had it not been for this association also requesting the DTI to hold back on the legislative review. It's, I would suspect that project, particularly to look at issues such as the voluntary mediation space. That was clear, committed. And at this point in time, when we are progressing with this particular matter, it is not envisaged actually that it will actually take 18 months. And even if it were, project has been running for long. That's how sometimes policy and legislative development would sometimes take. So, on the issue, Honourable Chair, of the implement
and relate certain issues. Yes, the CCI will be exposed to this, will even engage with our federal department, which is the Department of Higher Education, to look at whether actually graduates apart from assessing employment simply because they are blacklisted. And of course the answer is same as we got here, that it's mainly in the financial sector, if someone who can work in the financial sector. But the credit amnesty will actually also help that in certain areas. Because also one of the issues that actually arose is that it's not actually the graduates and the students themselves who are blacklisted. It's actually their parents or their relatives who have actually taken those loans. So there is, although there might be some effect, but it's minimized by such factors that it's not actually the parents and not the entire employment industry that actually bars or requires credit records for purposes of employing new graduates, except particularly in the financial sector. So on the last point with the credit, life amnesty. I just want to, our credit life, sorry. I just want to say that, coupled with this part of the credit amnesty project, which we are carefully studying, there won't be any reckless expansion of records. Coupled with the affordability assessment, we believe that the credit history profile will not, or the absence of credit history profile will not necessarily negatively affect the credit industry to a point whereby they actually reckless lending. Because they're targeting people who can actually pay their debts or have actually paid their debts, or we are targeting people who have got a very low low level of outstanding debt, say 10,000 rand and below. And you are saying those people must participate into the market. And the National Credit Regulator is also conducting a regulatory impact assessment on that, of the social economic impact assessment on what would happen to the market should that be done. So there's no recklessness around that. The very, very last issue is the credit line. So I think we agree with the committee that, and we would have loved to have been to have had access to those records, because credit life is a big issue. And one of the things that we don't see to be here in the press to be saying is how much is the loss ratio? How much are the claims? How much literacy goes into informing people that you have credit life and claim in these circumstances? Because our experience tells us that some people actually have this, but they don't know whether they claim, whether they, when somebody is dead or retrenched and so on. So, and what is the reasonable price for credit life? Well, it does have to seem to be a pure profit here at some stage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Honourable Hill-Lewis, you had your hand up, and I'm not sure exactly what it was in relation to.
Chair, there were two questions from the NCR that weren't answered, and then one follow-up up if I'm allowed.
You see, what we did say is that the questions that were unanswered should come back to us. But you made it a bit difficult now because you're talking of a follow-up. So could you repeat those questions with a follow-up?
You mentioned that you had a task team looking into the abuse of credit life. I agree with the detail that credit life is a massive issue, sometimes doubling the monthly installments. What's the progress on that task team? How far are you, is that task team from reporting? That is the first one. Secondly, can we see the impact assessments on the impact assessment study that you did on the amnesty proposal? And then the follow-up from what you were saying on your work on illegal lenders, can you tell us how many illegal lenders you have prosecuted or taken action against in the last year or so?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the number of legal lenders, I'm going to ask the Chief Operations Officer to respond to that. The Credit Life has team. Remember, as I indicated earlier, this is a project that is driven by National Treasury. What SNCR were tasked to start getting, you know, information in the form of returns from insurance companies. Most of which are not regulated by the NCR, but are regulated by SSB. But we have now got three sets, and we believe that we have information that we can reliably, you know, start talking to. There's a report already that has been drafted with findings and recommendations. But what's happening now is that they've circulated that report last week to all the different stakeholders that are participating in that testing. The Reserve Bank, NCR, National Treasury, the Competition Commission, and they are waiting for inputs. I'm made to understand that the deadline is the first week in March. So, yeah, we will know after that process, you know, what is going to happen. And I'm going to, in terms of the impact assessment study, I believe, I don't think it would be a problem for the committee, you know, to get a copy, but I think we corrected. It's a DTI project, but we can check with DTI.
We are going to be pursuing that and following those things up, including the figures there that are outstanding, you see. So your follow-up question is included in that, and there are several aspects that we do need to get back from some of you. But I want them formulated effectively so we accommodate the unanswered questions plus anything else, and including the issue of the numbers confirmed here with the, I think, the issue that the Honourable Hill Lewis raised, but also I must re-emphasise, it's only now I'm hearing from DTI again about Credit Life and from the NCR, when we put that to the banks, per se as a group, we still didn't get the actual cost of that, you see. And if we can't get it, it's unlikely that the borrower will be able to ascertain it any better. So I don't want the response now, but that will be coming to all of you. We want these facts and figures in an integrated manner, because you may continue to get irresponsible borrowers, as some of you claim that they are, if they don't know the cost of the borrowing, and they can't break it down. And we do need it broken down. Always need it broken down. But what I think needs to be welcomed at any rate is the fact that BASA and those who are members of BASA have taken a decision that they will, in fact, they're looking at the emoluments attachment orders, and also that you will fully support the enforcement initiative against credit providers issuing pre-signed garnishee orders, which have come up a lot recently in some of the challenges that have led to the behavior that is certainly not in the interest of the country itself. And that's part of it, it's contributing to that. I think there isn't a member in the committee that doesn't acknowledge the financial crisis when it came. The entire world does. We all acknowledge that. We also want to say we acknowledge the fact that there are other factors in the environment involved that came out in November already, and we acknowledge that. What we were looking at now is the role that you are playing within this environment itself. And how responsible is that? And if it is responsible, is there not something more you can do to facilitate responsible borrowing from your side of it as well? And that means full disclosure, you see, on these matters. I want to re-emphasize the support of the committee for the point made by the whip here, the Honourable Sadevi, that we have to have institutions working with each other. If we don't, it simply has a negative impact on those they most expected to serve. And that's our concern in this particular regard. We're not going into the ins and outs at this particular committee. But we, you know, we're not going to be able to continue to pursue this month or the next month. And what we'll need to do is, after you've given us written responses, we will have a meeting as a committee to develop a report and to pass such a report, which we will make available to you. But I don't see that arising before the first week in April or end of March because of our workload. But please don't delay your own communication with us once you receive ours. I hope that that is correct. So we have all of your details. I do want to thank you all for coming. And once again, I apologize on behalf of the committee for the cancellation of that Friday. I can't remember the actual date, but we had a serious issue with medical apologies and the like, and I don't think we would have done justice to this issue of unsecured lending and its impact on society and the individual if two people had been present. So thank you very much for being here. I also want to indicate to the committee that it is very necessary for you to come forth here with those unresponded questions in writing in the before Friday, if possible, so that this can be sent on to them along with other issues on Monday. You've got until Monday, the Tuesday morning, we will process that. So thank you to those who came and made an input, that is FASA, all the banks, and the national regulator, and to the DTI, who are also here, and others. To the committee, I need to say two things, and that is, we initially were scheduled to meet on the 1st, and that was three programs ago, and I hope everyone has recognized that we are not meeting on the 1st. I hope everyone is now aware of that, all right? And that's the first day that we will be meeting, but we do need to look at these issues, the WIP and myself in particular. We were due to meet on the 5th of March with the colloquium. Our colloquium was originally going to take place at the end of January, some of you will remember, and it had been postponed due to the National MRSA inquiry and so on. And if it didn't make sense to, deal with the same people while MRSA was already, as a matter of urgency, trying to deal with it. A number of issues have come out of that report, as we know. So we do need to review the situation. Are we cancelling it? No. But I just want members to be aware that we're going to have to take count of these other issues. There is a new draft program for you. Draft is the word. And this is on the basis of the fact that we've got 11 pieces of legislation, possibly another one which will be 12, not possibly, most definitely, the National Credit Act, possibly coming out, the one we're dealing with and so on. And as a result of that, a decision was taken by the chair of chairs that there would be a need for us to be working on Tuesday as well. However, we put this out as a draft program because there are for one or two issues that need to be tied up. What that would mean is that members would meet Tuesday and Wednesday officially according to the program of Parliament, and like any other committee, have the option of Friday. But we would have to work with other committees to secure that particular day. And finally, I want to re-emphasize that Parliament's position is clear. Where legislation is concerned, it takes precedence in Parliament, because that is our core function. And that's why there has been this issue has been addressed in the particular manner that it is. But we will come back to you with confirmation, I'm hoping, on the 1st, Friday the 1st. If not, then we will certainly address that, at Tuesday's meeting, which I wish people would accept was scheduled for some time now, the colloquium, and not just simply today. On that particular note, I do want to thank you, and of course the lock-up session is still in place, and you can certainly go there. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I presume then that the draft report will be withdrawn from the order paper for tomorrow. I presume the draft IHAP report on the audit tomorrow that deals with the colloquium, will that be pushed to next week?
Yes, let me allow the whip to deal with that immediately. Thank you. Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Originally, the preliminary report was scheduled to be tabled in Parliament tomorrow, the 28th. But due to the fact that we are having a curriculum for these 2 days, it was unadvisable to put the interim report when you can have a final product within the end of April, the following month. So that's what has been withdrawn. So I think that the whips of the committee, the whips of the Barabrika party will be important for this. Thank you.
We do want to thank you. That report was on the ATC. That was why it had to go through process, because it was ATC'd, I think, in November. Yeah. And that is why we have the hiccup now. I also draw your attention to the fact that Ms. Herling will not be with us between the 2nd and 16th of March due to study leave. It's on the program here. And also Ms. Madlani, our researcher, is on a study visit with international relations overseas between the 4th and 11th. And then I have applied, made a request for extra support staff to assist the committee secretary during that period. But I wish to thank all the members who've been here. Thank you very much.